Okay, thank you, Larry, for short introduction. So I will have many things to say. It is kind of introductory, so it will have a rather large introductory part, so you will see. Now, first I want to show this complicated transparency, which is kind of telling that the state of this game was evolving, and it had all kind of things in it. So that's like a map of the territory. So it started with rig data and hydrodynamics. And then we have, you don't see it? Okay, I have to push the button still. Okay, so we have lattice simulation. And lattice simulation.
Yeah, the computer doesn't
have to. So I can put it here? Okay. Sure. How far it can go? It's almost there. Okay. Okay, so we get also from lattice quasi-particles, electric and magnetic, I will tell a little bit about. And potentials between them, correlation functions. So with quantum mechanics, we learn that these quasi-particles will bind. They will produce bound states and produce complicated many-body states.
You can reference from there, rather than standing at your computer.
But I have to push, since I have this.
You don't have a little infrared thing.
Yes, I don't have this little infrared thing. Okay. So there is also plasma physics, which tell us a lot about strongly coupled plasmas, and in particular this little device known as molecular dynamics, just classical simulations, which were used widely for ordinary plasmas, and we also use it now, and found a lot of interesting things about transport properties, which is another way of calculating them, and that is related to energy loss, collective modes, and Mach cones. Then there is this gift from string theories, the idea of CFT correspondence, which would be kind of mostly discussed. And then there is other directions, which is also very fascinating, from general gauge theories, which has to do with magnetic objects and electric magnetic duality. And it has to do with flux tubes and confinement, and confinement is condensation of this magnetic object. So this is very many fascinating physics, really extremely rich, suddenly, and active area. So we have to be very clever to work on it. And I will only go about some things. So I will have basically two parts. One is introduction, and that is in equilibrium, I call it. And out of equilibrium is not really done. It is kind of ideas and work in progress. So the first thing is the rig findings itself. I will not go too much about it, but tell you that the questions are why is quark-gluon plasma, is this strongly coupled? Why is such a good liquid? We know from comparison to data that its viscosity is very small. Also, its diffusion constant is also extremely small. So the general question is why it happens. Is it related to the confinement or not? And in more practical sense, that means, is it only close to TC? Will it only be at rig, or it will be at LHC2? So one fascinating thing, which I only tell you a little bit, is this electric magnetic duality. So it mostly comes from lattice and from simulations I will describe. But it is really beautiful physics, which can be explained, at least part of it, on the level of like physics 101, that using nothing other than classical dynamics and Lorentz force, you can understand that a plasma made of electric particles or a plasma made of electric and magnetic particles behave differently. And so this is one thing. and I will have small transport summary showing what comes out of it, and then tell a little bit about applications of ADS-CFT. We'll set a discussion, and Larry will tell us much more on that. And then I go to this part two, equilibration in this ADS-CFT setting. So the reason why I think this setting is so nice is that maybe I directly go to advantages which I see in it. First of all, this correspondence is set in such a marvelous thing that something dual to complete quantum field theory on the boundary is something classical in the bulk. It's very nice to deal with classical objects, so this is one advantage. The second is, as usual in physics, you have equation of motion which are even in time. You have second derivative in time, so it is not dissipative equations. There are Einstein equation, Maxwell equation. However, if you have a black hole, you have boundary condition, which is T-odd, so you naturally have dissipation. All objects fall into black hole. Nobody fly out of black holes. So you, by default, has a setting in which the most difficult part, what exactly relaxation means, dynamical, etc., is kind of avoided. That you already have boundary condition, which is T-odd and dissipative. Yes, that's nice. And of course, there are a lot of knowledge in this other room where the other program sits of collapsing objects and falling into black hole, which I personally don't have much, but in principle we can benefit. So we'll have a falling object into black hole, and the question is how to set up the problem and what can we solve. So we have a couple of papers on it, and the object would be a string which have two ends on heavy quarks, and the string is falling, and we can calculate the falling string and the hologram of that string and see how that look like. And it ends with some list of homework problems. So I start, since I had kind of this. So the first part is kind of colloquium style. That's why I have pictures like this. So here I have the three people who 50 years ago thought that a strong interaction can actually be what we would call today strongly coupled and behave in thermal and hydrodynamical way. So Fermi proposed that when two protons collide, somehow equilibrium settles in miraculously and you calculate total entropy, and he predicted that density, that multiplicity depend on collision energy in this particular way, which actually is pretty well empirically satisfied. And Pomeranchuk immediately noticed that if there is so strong interaction, why the particles would fly out? They would be still strongly interacting till some condition, which we now call freeze-out. And then Landau said, oh, between these two conditions, there should be hydrodynamics, and entropy is conserved throughout, so Fermi prediction is correct, although the idea that particles immediately fly away to the detector is wrong. And that was very nice. And what is also interesting, that Landau wrote in 53, and just a couple of years before, he discovered the Landau pole. So he had the idea completely opposite to asymptotic freedom, that all interactions become strong at small distances, and that is why it is strongly coupled. So here I mention a couple of my attempts to use the same idea. Both of them failed. So one of them in 1971, when I thought about E plus E minus and spherical explosion. Of course, that was before asymptotic freedom and before discovery of jets in E plus E minus, so that didn't work apparently. At small distances, we do have weakened coupling. Then when ISR data came up in PP collisions and particle ratios look formal, we look if there is a radial flow. So we try to develop phenomenological means to tell if there is explosion happening in PP in transverse coordinates. And we don't have any evidences for that. And now we know that if instead of PP, somebody would accelerate even relatively small nuclei at the same machine, they will find it. But it never happened. So it happened in mid-90s when there were a CERN experiment, fixed target experiment at much lower energy, which have shown that if you go to lead-lead collisions, you do have explosion, which at least radially looks hydrodynamically, and therefore we made prediction for it based on that, which have this elliptic flow, which are also. So I will not go in detail into Rieck findings, just mention these three things. This is, so to say, up to now, that there is this ideal hydro, which shows this radial and elliptic flow in transverse plane. All of this velocity and the ellipticity are function of many different parameters, like centrality, rapidity, size of the nuclei collided, and also the final particle species. There are about a dozen different particle species which were studied, and all of them show this elliptic flow. The next particle, by the way, we are waiting with great interest, is JPSI. Is JPSI flow together with everybody else? Probably it does, but it would be interesting to see. So there is jet quenching, which was discovered.
Does anybody need to know what elliptic flow is?
I will have the next slide. Yes, but in principle, Paul will tell much more about hydro and things on Thursday. So jets, high energy jets in this thing is, of course, quench. Its energy goes into the medium, and it was expected that this effect would be on the level of 20% attenuation. And instead, jet quenching is a factor 5 effect, which means 80% of jets did not make out of a fireball. And so it is very large. It was also, that was a big hit some years ago. Then it was discovered that the charm quark has also quenching, and the quenching is more or less the same as for light quarks and gluons. And even by Casimir, it should be different from gluons, and it should be different from other quarks because this quark is heavy and radiates less. The next which is coming now is B quarks. Presumably next month on a conference, we will see something about that. And what is more also very surprising, not predicted beforehand, but kind of after the fact, that the jets destroyed, this energy does not go into cone of radiation forward of Bremsstrahlung type behavior as we normally expect it to be, but instead it immediately goes into medium, into hydro, and create hydro phenomena, which we call conical flow. So this is the, oops. Sorry, I missed it once again. So this is the explanation of elliptic flow. This is one nuclei colliding into the blackboard, the other going from the blackboard. The Salmond is the region where collision happens. These are spectators. So if you have nothing interesting happens, you have just jets or mini jets flying out, you have isotropic distribution in this plane. If you calculate to next order, you find that the jets multiply other than absorbed. So the calculation of next order is telling that you have more particles this way than this way. While in hydro, hydro tells you that the hydro gradient is larger this way than this way, so there would be explosion in this direction, and you can calculate it if you know equation of state and if you know the original size and shape. So this is simple exercise, and that was calculated, and it was all working. I don't show the original papers from the year 2000 and earlier, but I just show the latest one, and that is what from Paul, who will tell more on Thursday. So this is this ellipticity versus centrality. This is central collision, which is axially symmetric. So there is kinematical zero here. And this is very large system, which is relatively small system. If a system works to a pretty small system, it means it's remarkably good liquid. And this is a function of Pt, the same parameter. So all you have to see here is the viscosity value. So green line means ideal, which means eta 0. And then there are these values of eta over s, that's dimensionless ratio of viscosity. Roughly speaking, you might say it's a mean free path in units of interparticle distances. So it's surprising that it's less than 1. It's never happened before. And furthermore, it's much less than 1. If you look at this curve, for example, the black one is the best, and the black one is 0.03. And that is even smaller than 1 over 4 pi, which would be appearing later. here is this data on these charm jets, and this one would mean that charm quarks ignore quark-gluon plasma, and the fact that these data points, the blue data points, go down to about 0.2 around here, and that 0.2 is the same level for light quarks, written somewhere here. So this is my statement that absorption of charm quarks is like normal quarks and gluons at PT about 4-5 GeV. And after that, it becomes B quarks dominating. And this is ellipticity of this charm quark. So there is charm quarks flow together with hydra, and that is also surprising. These different values give you this diffusion constant. So this value is a charm diffusion constant, another transport coefficient. And the values are rather close to, I would say, this one, the red one, this one.
Because it first part, it looks like it's wildly
yes. Green. Here, presumably, this theory is not really working, and there are something else happening. And indeed, there is this Cronian effect and some other phenomena which are not included in this simple. This is simple Langevin with some diffusion constant. But if you look somewhere here, where it kind of horizontal, you ignore this point, so it is somewhere here, and this is the values. So the main point is we know approximately these values, and they're very far from perturbative. So this is my zonic boom, which was from Hans Stoker and also from our paper. And this is a point where two jets are produced. This is a trigger jet. Because we trigger on it, it is close to the fireball surface, and it has large PT, several GeV usually, and it is more or less intact. Actually, it creates some phenomena but called ridge, but that's not important. Its brother goes the other way because PT is conserved, so it goes through the diameter, and normally if it is several GeV jet, it dies out. But why it dies out, the question is where the energy of it goes. And so if you ignore the hydro solution, which is not that important, and we go to the data, so this is a distribution of the angle in transverse plane. This is zero by definition is the trigger, the hot trigger, the first jet. This is pi, means 180 degrees toward it. So this bump is a brother jet, and in PP collisions, you see this type of picture. This is commoving with the jet and then anti-commoving. And this 60-90 means it's a very peripheral collision, so it looks like proton-proton collisions well known to high-energy physicists. But if you go from this very peripheral beam to all others, for example, in the central one or this one, you see that at 180 degrees, you have actually minimum, not maximum. That means that the jet which go through fireball died. And instead, you see this peak at this red line, and the red line correspond to Mach angle corresponding to sound in that fireball. So it really looks like we have a conical Mach cone of collective phenomena rather than Bremsstrahlung. And
what are the points in the crystallograms?
What are the?
The points, the symbols.
The points are from data. There are error bars. The histogram, I don't recall what exactly it is. The different histograms is a little bit different subtraction of the so-called elliptic flow. Yes. So, for example, if you go to central collision, which has no elliptic flow, they're all the same. Yes.
And here, error statistics.
The error bars are statistical, and the difference between these different histogram is kind of systematic.
If you look at the particular panels, the agreement between data and calculations is so spectacular, it's impossible.
No. There are no calculations. These are not histograms. Are not calculation. Histograms are different. Histograms are a little bit different subtraction of some other effects. Uh-huh. These are all data. Yes.
Okay.
The calculation of this actually were done, and the shape is roughly correct.
Is the Mach cone angle bigger than pi over 2?
No. It is about 60 degrees, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah. It cannot be bigger than pi over 2.
Sure.
When velocity 1, the formula is cos is ratio of velocities.
Yes.
When one velocity go to 0, if you instantaneously punch through the apple, you get 90 degrees.
Yes. Yes. Sure.
Everything expands transversely. No, it's
Maybe
not. It's not. It's about 60 degrees. But it is much larger than any Bremsstrahlung peak which you can imagine will go. Yes? So it is very nice that we see.
He's asking this because of the phi in radiance.
That's the phi in radiance, yes. Okay, so now another introductory subject, this electric magnetic duality. The fact that we have, so I try to convince you that there are magnetic objects in plasma, and we only realized it a couple of years ago, although we should have thought of it long ago. First of all, there is this Toffmann der Stamm papers who said that confinement is some kind of magnetic superconductor. So, and then there were studies on the lattice of flux tubes and how the superconductor picture works or not, and it works. So, and it not only shows that it works, but the density of these monopoles which sit in the condensate in the vacuum to make confinement is very, very high because the size of the confining string is very small. And you may ask a question, if you go to the confinement and you excite all these particles out of a condensate, you presumably have a very large density of monopoles. And if you compare these monopoles to other particles, you find they are comparable. If you go to the Zyber-Witten business, this is a very good solvable example, not QCD, of course, which has Higgsing explicitly, and then there is this duality and different approaches, electric and magnetic, which are dualities in terms of approach, not in terms of particles. So this is kind of our phase diagram.
So you say the lattice work is established?
Just wait, I'll show a couple examples, yes? Yes, I'm saying that we see a number of magnetic objects which is kind of comparable to but this is first overview, very, very crude phase diagram. This is density, density and temperature kind of compactified. So what I want to say is that here at very high temperature and density, we have a usual quark-gluon plasma, which are weakly coupled. So it's electrically dominated, meaning that there are quarks and gluons, other quasi-particles, very small, very heavy amount of monopoles. There are classical solutions, and they are unimportant. Here we have a confined phase where we have magnetic condensate, and all electric objects are in the flux tubes. The electric is confined. Here we have color superconductor. It contains diquark condensation, and diquark condensate is electrically charged. So here magnetic objects are confined and have flux tubes. And somewhere there is a line where there is about equal number of electric and magnetic objects, and the coupling constants also are equal. The coupling constants, as is written here, according to Dirac, this is electric coupling, which we normally call G, and that is magnetic coupling. The product of them must stay constant. So if we go from here, we have weak electric coupling, and then it grows. That means the magnetic one does the opposite, and somewhere they should be equal, and they both should be equal to 1, so there is this region. And it turns out that we now kind of have evidences that this region where that happens is about 1.5 Tc. So domain is between 1 and 2 Tc. So we are in this domain where number of electric and magnetic objects and their couplings are about equal.
How do you get that phase diagram? Those lines are computed with lattice calculations? Or
This is schematic. Now I show two examples, okay? So one recent paper, very nice paper, which look for monopoles and look for their density. So that is reduced density of monopoles divided by T cube. And you see that it is relatively small right at several times Tc, but then it rises very quickly toward Tc. And they also do correlation between opposite monopole, anti-monopole, which are attracted to each other. That's why you have a peak. And the monopole-monopole, which are repelling each other and has this minus. So that gives you interaction potential between monopoles. And here is what you would kind of would ask. This is screening masses for electric and magnetic fields in quark-gluon plasma. These squares are electric screening mass, M over T. So this is of the order G. This is of the order G squared, so it is smaller This is magnetic, smaller than electric. This is the usual quark-gluon plasma, which we were doing, you know, 20 years ago, perturbative one. And see what happens. The squares actually here go to zero. There are data which show more precisely that when we are at TC, there are no more electric objects, and so we have no plasma anymore. There is only hadrons on the left of one. But magnetic actually rises, and it continues through this. So magnetic fields behave completely differently. And this blue arrow tell you where they cross, which is roughly this one and
so 1.4. These are some gauge variant definitions of screening masses.
Yeah, but okay. They are.
So how does it depend on how you define that? Do you have, has this been systematic?
I think the qualitative behavior that electric goes to zero here and those does not go to zero is holding always, so they always have to cross. And but here is, so we start looking at that, we start doing little simulations with electric and magnetic objects, and I wouldn't bother you with simulations themselves. In simulations we use about 1,000 particles, and they just move according to forces, which are Coulomb forces and Lorentz forces, and they equilibrate, and by Kubo formulas you can calculate viscosities and diffusion constant and everything else. But there is much simpler way to explaining what happens, this is the way how I try to explain it to you. You can actually do with a system which has only one dynamical object. So imagine that you have two dipoles, static dipole, plus and minus, electric dipole, and one particle of the opposite type, the monopole. So if it has velocity going this way or any other way, you would say it just flies away. If it goes this way, it probably goes through that system. And if velocity is sufficiently large, this is what it does. However, if velocity is sufficiently small, and actually the actual condition is potential energy, the interaction between them, divided by kinetic energy, by temperature. So when this parameter is 1 or larger than 1, the potential is very important. So what will this particle do? It has magnetic charge, so it is not directly attracted to it. If it doesn't move, it doesn't interact at all. If it moves, there is Lorentz force. So monopole start rotating around the field line. And where the field line goes, the field line, it always has one component of its velocity along field line, so it either go to one charge or the other. When it goes toward the charge, the field becomes stronger, so the circle, Larmor circle, becomes smaller and smaller, so it goes over so-called Poincaré cone and collides with this particle. It repels, go back, and the same thing repeats again.
Sorry, Mike, your answer. What do you mean by a monopole?
I mean, it's a particle with magnetic charge. Yes, it's a particle with magnetic charge. It's gluomagnetic. Well, there are classical solutions of monopole type in non-abelian things.
But so far, this is just abelian.
This is just a particle. This is just abelian, yes. We can do non-abelian. We actually did some non-abelians too.
Does it appear in the plasma? I mean, is it direct?
Yes.
You pretend to this to explain a very good ideal fluid somehow. It
should okay. Let's separate this question. So I ask hypothetical. What will happen if you have a plasma with electric and magnetic charges? This is general physics question, how they will behave. So I'm saying in this particular example, one monopole will simply move between the two charges if its velocity is not large. This is what it does in transverse plane. The fact that it goes here, it approaches one charge, go back, approach another charge, and it kind of tumbles like this. So I'm calling that the two charges with one monopole, or the dual to that, two monopoles with one electric charge, or any other combination of charges, play this ping-pong without even moving. So this is dual to famous magnetic bottle. So this is Butker, who invented this magnetic bottle in 50s. Of course, in electrodynamics, he didn't have a monopole, or so he has a coil, and that was not perfect. But the pink actually works. Recently we did,
Edward, in your description where you said it bounces off, mm-hmm. That's something you just put in by hand,
yes,
right?
Yes, I put it by hand.
So you're just some hardcore you
study. Yes, right. Because otherwise the whole thing...
The whole equation's breaking yeah. down.
Here is another example that you have a kind of grain of salt, as we call it. So a plus and minus charge is correlated in some... It is a liquid, so it's not really a crystal, but it has correlations which are liquid-like, like this. And suppose there is a monopole in this cage, and you can put it and ask a question how it moves and how long will it be in a cage before it finds a hole. So in principle, if there is no velocity, it don't even interact with others, right? And so it can leave. However, if it start moving, what you see from this trajectory, it keep colliding with corners, and the total time it spends is long and depend on velocity, and there is this parameter which is ratio of potential to kinetic energy. So it grows very quickly with when this parameter becomes large. And that is what we need. We need to explain the liquid which is unusually strongly colliding. So in this particular situation, the particle, instead of going through the sides of this cube, keep colliding with corners for a long time before going out and then reduce diffusion. So qualitatively, we have an effect, trapping effect. If we put together, this is my short transport summary, this is logarithm of diffusion constant, this is logarithm of viscosity in some units, it's inverse of 1 over eta over s. So large value means very perfect liquid, small means very bad liquid, and to the right. So if you have weakly coupled theories, the two quantities are proportional to each other, therefore we have this line with a slope 1, and the data are somewhere here, and the results from our simulations are sitting in the right ballpark, and in particular, if you have 50-50 liquid of electric and magnetic charges, you can see it here. ADS-CFT gave a curve which also sits in the right place. So the question is, are they related? Is it or they are not related, and how that will be seen? So it will be seen at LHC because at LHC we go from 2TC to about 4TC, and so this mechanism with monopoles wouldn't work because we know that monopoles appear in big numbers only pretty close to TC. This is related to confinement and this electric magnetic struggle. So if we will see hydro at LHC, that would mean that the system is strongly enough interacting even without them. And we have so-called quasi-conformal region where presumably it also can be described by ADS-CFT. But we don't know whether it will happen or not. I skip this, and now I go to ADS-CFT. So ADS-CFT is this duality, and this is my little joke that LHC people and theorists hope to produce a black hole with some very small probability, which, but they mean real black hole in our world. In ADS-CFT sense, we say that any Rick event is a black hole production because we have equilibration. This black hole means that we produce temperature, an equilibrated system. Yes. So in ADS sense, we do have these black holes. Now, here are the guys who invented the correspondence. Maybe I go very quickly through all this. And also through this. Maybe just one little thing, one way of thinking of the fifth coordinate is that it is just extra mathematical dimension, like when we have complex variables and we say we have functions with some bump on the real axis, but there is a pole in a complex plane. And pole is a simple analytic object and we can understand it, etc. So we study interaction of poles instead of functions. One can also think of fifth coordinate as in the sense of renormalization group coordinates, and that is useful if we want to make sense of QCD-like theories where a coupling runs and we have strongly coupled regions where this ADS-CFT logic will work and weakly coupled regions where it wouldn't work. But nevertheless, they sit in one and the same space and have the same common wave functions as a function of all scales, weakly coupled and strongly coupled and things like that. Anyway, so this is this coordinate z, and one important thing is that this is inverse to coordinate called r. This is AdS curvature, and r is distance to the black hole. So if everything falls into black hole, that means r decreases and z increases, and this is a simple AdS metric in terms of the z coordinates.
So what do you think of the curvature radius, the AdS radius, as being for QCD? The usual number I hear is, what, r to the fourth is 20 or something like that?
Well, we have we looked at also lattice works, etc. So this is also gauge-dependent definition of some Green functions, etc., etc. The most courageous people tell you that alpha, so you may ask, how high alpha S QCD grows? If you open a plot, which you have seen in particle data book from David Gross, it shows above 1 GeV. And so alpha is always less than a third. If you go the other way and see how much it grows to value about 2. So that would be lambda in your notations about 80. But Foric thinks when we put into formulas, which many people derived, including Clary, for example, you get indeed numbers like 20, 30 for lambda. Yeah, so
like what?
When you take
20 to 30
formulas and push them
I don't mean this. When you take strong coupling formula, when you take weak coupled formula and you put alpha equal 1, that's cheating. Because I seem to, it happens every day. Cheating is part of life. We are not surprised by this, but we know that perturbation theory does not converge. And I love to repeat, if I see a guy who put alpha even equal 1/2, I say, did you try to put it in Klein-Gordon equation? Do you know that particles fall on each other at this alpha and you think it's perturbative? I mean that when people take answers for strong coupling and then compare to experiment, which roughly speaking give us, so you give this 20, 40.
So I love the black hole story, of course,
yes.
But the question of having a radius which is very near the Planck scale or the Spring scale is the one thing I have a hard time getting past.
Well,
do you have any insights on?
No, I don't have any insights that you don't have. It's a question of people calculating next order effects. In a couple cases, it was calculated for this viscosity, it was calculated, and the corrections are small. Yes. So if you put, there is inverse power of lambda and the coefficients of the other one, so if lambda is about 20, 30, it doesn't look, it still look much, much better than perturbative series.
Well,
maybe it is even convergent.
One or two or three or something.
Okay. Which would be fine for me. Okay, so here are my very quickly my examples, and then I go to non-equilibrium. Yes, I really nearly exhausted my time on this. So this is one example, which is one of the first applications, the Maldacena dipole. So we have two charges. And there is very complicated fields which you try to understand on the boundary. Instead of that, we think out of the boundary, and there is a string connecting the two charges. So a string is a flux tube, and so it's just singular line of a flux. You will see that it is nowhere close to anything like confining string on the boundary, yet in the bulk, so this is the z equals 0, is our four-dimensional world and or the AdS boundary, and here is this string. A string going down because it is a material body and it is in a gravity field, and it's pretty easy to calculate its shape and to calculate a coefficient in this formula. So this is a Coulomb law from Maldacena and these other authors at the same time. The question then is, so the main thing which people try to understand, why there is a square root of lambda instead of lambda, can it be done by some resummations? Can it be understood as some coefficients? But the question is, the point is, it is not just a coefficient. So we recently also calculated stress tensor from Maldacena dipole, And people before us calculated from dilaton a scalar operator from Maldacena string. And it has a completely different distribution, both in distance, and it has different power of dipole, not only coupling constant, but space distribution is different. There is no way, there is only electric field in it, and so it's very, very different. That's one example of hologram, that you can take this string and then calculate back to horizon and see distribution of energy. Unfortunately, we don't have distribution of fields themselves. We have distribution of only some colorless operators, in particular stress tensor or F mu squared. But that would be important later. Now, this is famous calculation of Son, Policastro, Starinets, who calculated from correlator of T mu, the N-graviton propagator, the viscosity. What I recently, more recently than O3, I would say, learned is that actually one can look at this. So one way of looking at it, there is gravitational wave going from one point to another, and you solve Einstein equation, et cetera, et cetera, and you get this, and this is how they did it. The other way to do it is to pretend that there is nothing below the horizon, and then there is some material membrane, which is called membrane paradigm, on here. So if there is a wave on the top, if you go outside and look at the beach, you see there are waves. But if you look very well, you find there are waves on the bottom, on the sand, and they are related to each other somehow. So in this case, you can really relate this wave to that wave. And why it is important? Because this membrane on the horizon is absorptive membrane. There is a boundary condition on it which translates to viscosity directly, to some universal viscosity. It turned out that the universal viscosity and resistivity of a membrane were derived by Damour 30 years ago, in late 70s. So it turned out that on the bottom we have dissipative phenomena which are completely universal. It's just property of boundary condition in the black hole. So this is another beautiful calculation. It's a correlator of two field strengths on two quarks, one in one world, the other in anti-world. It should be like this geometry because of boundary condition. These two quarks cannot live in one and the same world because it is not Feynman propagator, it's a retarded propagator, and the rules of non-equilibrium dynamics is such that you need really world and anti-world. If you have this geometric, the setting with black holes, you really need this complete Kruskal coordinates which have both, and then as this quark moves here and the anti-quark moves there, they are connected with a string going through this whole thing, and then on a string you can make a perturbation, the perturbation goes through. And this is my little cartoon to this, which I still show. So you have a fisherman and a fish. Fish is in another universe. If you wave it here, the wave goes down. You never learn whether the fish bites or not. But this is how the correlator was calculated, and it's correct, and it gives the right answer. This is another way approaching it. That's Larry and his collaborators and competitors, which a year ago in May 06 wrote three or four papers explaining that the quark moving in thermal environment has this trailing string which approach the horizon, and the shape of that string can be found, and that give you a drag, and the drag force and the diffusion coefficient are related by this Einstein relation, and these two different calculations agree. And this is another one also from Laurie, which is a hologram. So this is a hologram of stress tensor, namely energy. And what you see here is a conical flow. So that is all in equilibrium. So now we go out of equilibrium. And I'll try my best. So what in particularly we want to do about collisions? We start with some objects which are cold and high energy and colliding. There is no temperature. in this AGS setting, we start with AGS metric. AGS metric corresponds to extreme black hole, which means it has a minimal possible mass for its charge, and therefore there is no horizon. So it's called initial condition. Then something is colliding. Collision create what I call debris, different type of, depending what exactly was colliding. It produces additional matter. This matter falls because gravity just demanded to fall on the black hole. And the black hole ceases to become extreme and becomes non-extreme because you put more mass into it, some garbage. And therefore, it will have a horizon. And horizon means temperature. So in this scenario, everything you produce will fall. And after it falls, you create some temperature. And if you know the total mass of your garbage, clever people like Hawking and Bekenstein will tell you in advance, without any knowledge of how that proceeded, what will be the temperature and what will be the entropy, which is very unusual. Normally, when we calculate some dissipative processes, we never know what will be the entropy at the end. Yes? That depends on dissipative properties of medium and how long time it takes and things like that. Here, somehow, we know what it will be. We only want to fill the details.
The temperature and the entropy comes from the usual horizon.
Right.
Not from the particles.
Well, they must come somehow from the particles, and it's a function of time. It creates entropy somewhere. We want to see locally how that happens. Yet we know that it is all normalized to total mass of the garbage we've thrown. Yes? Independent. This is very interesting in principle how it will work out. So,
actually, the garbage, you know, the stuff you're scattering has a wave function. Normally you would think of, say, the analog of QCD as having an infrared brain, I believe, rather than just a horizon. And the wave function tends to be peaked near the infrared brain already, doesn't it? Just
before it enters.
Okay, maybe I'm too simplistic, yes? I really look at it completely classically, yes? Saying that everything in the bulk, I will think of it as classical. You are saying that in principle, there are, you might say, partons all the way to infrared, right?
Well, this is...
In the waves, and they create something.
Yeah. Well...
Okay,
But even classically, just to keep it simple, you throw a bunch of stuff together to form a black hole.
Mm-hmm. Not form
much
a black
of
hole.
Stuff, much
to
of the
black hole
together may fail to fall into the black hole and end up escaping. So you don't have a simple relation between the temperature.
So let's see how we try to set it up. First of all, we didn't start from very ultra-relativistic high energy things, let's consider that we collide heavy quarks. And heavy quarks are we follow more or less the same logic as was done with this jet quenching. So suppose there are kind of two heavy quarks for the beginning. We just move by straight line. They're so heavy, nothing will happen to them. They're non-dynamical. The only thing which happened, and that what I call Loon model, that is a popular model in QCD, when some hadrons collide, there is some exchange of color, and longitudinal strings are stretched, and then strings are broken, and you have some event generators based on this idea. In this setting, the string is longitudinally stretched. The string bends into fifth direction, and it has equation of motion, so one can study how the falling. So we wrote two papers with a student, Xu Lin, and one paper is about this falling string, and another paper is about holograms. So I will first show what we found about this particular model. So this model is not about equilibration yet. It is just two quarks colliding. So you may say this is like jet physics. In QCD, you collide two quarks, there is some Bremsstrahlung, and you create secondary particles. So from perturbative QCD, you calculate distribution of gluons. It is like strongly coupled analog of the same thing. You collide two heavy quarks, they go through each other, and you want to see what will happen. So you have this string, you can solve for it. So first of all, we found two types of solutions. We found that when velocity is less than something, there is a simple scaling solution that it is proportional to time. This is proper time, and this is spatial rapidity. Unfortunately, definition on the next slide. So there is some scaling solution. And that scaling solution is analytic. We studied that in detail. So if you go to this coordinate, this is proper time and longitudinal rapidity, which is related to t and x. So when it is tau times function of y, it means that it has fixed shape. The ends of the string in this rapidity variable are in particular y. So this y is rapidity of the ends, and then there is certain shape. This is the action. You can solve it and have a solution. To our surprise, we found that one little thing which we found was this, which we call it ADS Ampere law. When the velocity is small, the total action of this string is this coefficient, which is nothing but Maldacena coefficient times square root of coupling divided by L with this one. And then there is next term, V squared, which is current-current interaction. So it's interesting that when you have current-current interaction, it also has square root of lambda. And this coefficient, some people speculated there is a common from resummation, I would say, we also speculated, that from resummations you get one square root for interaction of Coulomb and Ampere. So that coefficient was 1/2 if you resum ladder diagrams. But here it turns out different coefficient, yes, 0.68. And that means that current-current interaction has a product of two velocities, but not on the square root. And the coefficient is different from 1/2. But what is interesting, really, is that we found this solution develops at some velocity, which is rather small. The rapidity is 0.27, so it's like a quarter. Velocity is like a quarter. A string gets unstable. It develops some Lyapunov exponents, and there is this real part of that Lyapunov exponent appears. In other words, when you pull the string starts wiggle. And whether it is general phenomenon or not, we don't know. We only found it for this solution. Larry, did your solution was studied on stability, mm-hmm. and it is stable?
For sufficiently heavy quarks, it's stable for all velocities.
For all velocities.
But there's a variety of other circumstances like these, you know, moving mesons through a plasma.
Which have
very, very similar stability.
That, of course, is solution at finite temperature. Here, why I'm interested in stability and instability. If the object which I want to drop, if I make my garbage of the simplest possible objects, and in this setting, the simplest object are classical strings. If a classical string falls in the black hole, that is my logic, and the entropy is being produced, classical string can only have entropy in terms of its shape. Yes? So I better find some instability and some Lyapunov exponents if I want to generate entropy from it, or otherwise it will not produce entropy. Okay, so then there are non-scaling solutions which took over at larger velocities. And these non-scaling solutions, we don't have analytic formula for it, but we study it numerically. They show another funny thing, that in these coordinates, this is the same as y. Ignore it. So this is different time moment. So with time, it develops a cusp.
What's it? What's being plotted?
Well, this is a shape of a string. It's upside down compared to my previous plots. I apologize. So this is a quark, and here is a pending quark, right? A pending string. And then it has this shape. So when it is small rapidity, it has kind of nearly semicircular form of Maldacena. Then it deforms. I am saying at larger and larger rapidity, and with time, it starts developing this behavior, that this is nearly vertical, and this is nearly horizontal, and the energy density become focusing in the corner. So it starts developing cusp as a function of time. And what it means is that there is a fragmentation region and there is a free-falling region which kind of become independent. So this free-falling region is nearly horizontal and it falls with approximately speed of light. And that would be important for me in a moment that I have simply horizontal falling strings. Now, the other paper with Shu was this holographic image of that string. So this is the image. This is energy density at different time moments. And this is pointing vector. This is model magnitude of pointing vector. And this is little arrows direction of pointing vector. So what you see here is that when you have two quarks and they produce a string, the observer in the boundary sees an exploding fireball, which is nearly spherical in terms of energy. It has this funny shape in terms of pointing vector. All the vectors point out, except for this funny little thing along the heads. But what is the formulas are very lengthy, and this piece is completely analytic, is very lengthy formulas. However, I bet that it is all correct because d mu t mu nu is zero, and all the structures miraculously cancel.
So here the quarks are separating
yes.
This direction, horizontally or vertically?
This direction. This direction. This is x. So the quarks fly here and there with some velocity v. And this is flow of matter, this flow and energy density as a function of time. This has different scales. If it's not readable, but the fireball expands. But what is important is that if you go and look at this T-menu and ask, is it hydro explosion or not? No, it isn't. The T-menu has a complicated shape. It cannot be written in a hydro form. It cannot be written as P plus epsilon times U mu U nu. It's non-hydro. And it's not supposed to be hydro because
it's not a perfect fluid.
It's not a perfect fluid or any fluid. Actually,
it's stuff expanding.
Well, it's not zero temperature. It's non-equilibrium something, right?
It's stuff expanding.
You still plug in some energy, and it floats out. You can go to commoving frame where the pointing is zero, but then you discover that you have anisotropic pressure, which so it is not really fluid, which is not surprising. Now we go, how do we get formalization and real hydro? Well, first step is that if we need a lot of garbage. Why we need a lot of garbage? Because we want to include back gravity reaction of these objects on a metric. That's how you get it, yes? We're supposed to get from extreme black hole to non-extreme black hole. So we want the metric to be changed in the process, yes? That only happens if you include gravitation of the garbage itself. So the simplest thing to say, suppose instead of colliding two heavy quarks, you have infinitely many on two parallel walls. Then you have those things multiplied many times, and they have some density, so you just take the previous formulas and integrate them in x and y, transverse coordinate. And you have other formulas which still don't have back reaction.
Edward, back to your initial conditions for just a moment. I mean, if I really had a theory that was like n equals 4 plus heavy quarks.
Yes, we only discussed this.
We could discuss collisions of heavy baryons. Nice, yeah. You know, physically sensible.
But AGS don't have confinement and baryons. I can make simply wall made of many heavy quarks, yes, and collide them.
Well, but my point is if we were really talking about baryons, which really would be stable yeah. particles in such a theory, right? They're nice color singlet objects. They have, if I have a baryon here, a baryon there, I have no long strings connecting these baryons. I could imagine they come together, they collide, complicated stuff happens, and yeah, there's some amplitude for strings to rearrange, and maybe I'll then get very short strings which gradually grow as things progress.
Well, baryons are objects of some particular geometry, etc. It's too complicated for us at the moment.
But you're really starting with an initial state that has intense correlations between these two walls.
Okay. Yeah, so you can arrange that your density of color is zero, that they're neutralized on the walls, that you have plus, minus, or some particular
But then this is an incredibly high energy excited state because you have all these laws of strength.
Yes, right. But this is that's true. But we don't care about this, and as you see, we don't even care about fragmentation region. We care about middle region, which kind of separate. So what I want to say is that one can maybe I'll skip this because I already said it. So this is the picture somehow. If you have this many strings, this is x coordinate along which you collide. These are your two velocity plus and minus v particles propagating. This is one string. Now you think of this to be multiplied in both coordinates indefinitely. So we have three-dimensional membrane made of these strings, material membrane. And this membrane is pooling. Now I want to include back gravitational reaction of that membrane. What should I do? First of all, there is two things will happen. One thing is that the horizon will bulge toward it. Why it bulge? Because there is gravity from it.
What horizon? I mean, you don't have a horizon yet, right?
You have you might think that I don't have it, but think that I have very, very low but non-zero temperature, yes? That I have it somewhere far at large Z. It will still bulge. The amount where it will be staying eventually will it depend on this mass, the mass which you put in. Yes. Such type of problems in rather complicated geometry, for example, were solved by relativists when there is one black hole falling on another black hole. Most simple geometry is that there is a very small black hole falling on a very large black hole. Then this thing would be a black hole with a horizon around, and that would be another horizon. So the horizon bulges toward one, they bulge toward each other because of mutual gravity, and then they unite, and this bump dissipates, and the total membrane moves a little higher, and that is the increase of entropy and temperature. Yes.
So I'd like to suggest a different picture, which actually there appears to be a connection in this picture, possibly in the Fossard bound. And that picture involves this wave function we were just discussing, where you have, let's think of it classically, you have two particles moving along your infrared brain. That's sort of where, at least for some of the wave functions, they peak down near the infrared brain. Those two particles collide and they form a black hole if you have sufficient
which
energy.
Which is then excites.
Yeah, which then, and the black hole might look something like that dotted line you've drawn. In fact, you can estimate its shape based on sort of the Newtonian approximation to the gravitational dynamics.
Okay. So there is this dilemma, which I want a little bit later to... I'll return to this, okay, in a slide. So this is a picture that we have two membranes. And in principle, they have some shapes, but we can consider the central region, and then they are flat and depend on Z only. So in my case, it is top down. It goes from UV down, and this go up. Then they meet, and after that, you have only horizon. Then the hologram from this no longer exists, and you will have thermal hydro as a hologram of the membrane, which is a horizon membrane. So that's a simple picture. The one membrane is falling, the other is rising, they joined and they move together. If there is expansion longitudinal, there is this phenomenon that if we expand it in one dimension, it will be contracted in other dimensions to keep area constant. And since we have three-dimensional membrane in five dimensions, there is some relation, and that corresponds to what we have in Bjorken Hydro solution. So it means that if we don't have just a point black hole, if we have the stretching black hole, then the horizon would be moving, and it will be moving in a particular way. So the solution for very large times is known, provided by Yannick, which has this moving horizon. Okay, now this homework problem, and I return to what you suggest. In this whole business of non-equilibrium physics, there are two maybe I start from this point. There are two logics which different people proposed, and I call it top-down and down-up. Top-down is you have certain particles, and they start rescattering, and equilibration is that, for example, they have large momenta, some of them, and they become cooled down to common temperature in this type of cascade. Yes? Another one, you create instability, or you have a simple Bremsstrahlung, so that you create a lot of soft particles, much softer than your original particles. And then the softer ones grow up. Yes? So I would say my falling membrane is this thing, yes? And the rising horizon on the model you suggest is this thing. It's which one create entropy? You start from low end, from which harmonics eventually we reach for equilibrium. So which membrane, in my language, falling from UV or rising from ER, they both exist and they both create entropy. And we can, in principle, describe it in some sense, settings, yes? And we know what, and in this setting, we know in advance what temperature and entropy will be, yes? We only don't know which of them produce what, yes?
I'm not sure that it really rises up in the case.
It rises up.
No, it's just produced. At some point you form a trapped surface, or something like a trapped surface.
Well, at late time, it suddenly move down and become flattened and kind of completely, well, at least in my setting, if it was completely zero temperature, then it must rise because it was kind of zero radius at the beginning. And it is in these numerical solutions when a black hole plunges into another black hole, they actually do rise. So they move toward each other, and this is very logical because gravity potential adds to G not naught and move to zero. So that's my homework problems, yes, that we have in this language something falling. They may create entropy. There is this Unruh temperature saying if there is an object sitting in strong gravity field which has acceleration, in some sense it's already see the vacuum as temperature. But on the other hand, if this object is not sitting but falling freely, then it doesn't seem to have temperature. And the string is an object which is in between. Its middle is kind of falling and the other side is holding, so I don't know what exactly happens, but how this Unruh effect works. It's quite clear that some entropy is produced by these falling strings, and the other one is produced by an elastic stretching of horizon, which by itself has dissipative properties, and its motion is also described by Navier-Stokes, which is beautiful. Okay, so that is all, and I go to my conclusions. So I have three sets of conclusions. I start with this. So one is about Rick. So it moves by itself. Okay, my setting was not good. What will happen? Okay. Bad. Okay, but you can still see it, right? If I start again, it will start again. Okay, so one thing is that we have Rick, and Rick is in this temperature interval, and we know that in this interval it's very strongly coupled. It has very small viscosity, surprisingly small, and diffusion constant. So first thing is that Lattice is telling us, and general arguments about confinement and magnetic mechanism of confinement is telling us that there should be a lot of magnetic objects close to TC, and there are there. And if you have plasma, which have alpha electric and alpha magnetic about 1 equal, and we have 50-50 of electric and magnetic objects, general symmetry argument is telling me that viscosity is minimal there. Because if you go one way, one component is weakly coupled. If you go the other way, the other component is weakly coupled. And so this or these particles would be propagating and viscosity would be large. So if we find a place where electric and magnetic are in equilibrium and both alphas are about one, that would be the best possible liquid. That's one summary of this situation, and let's see how it works. Then there is ADS-CFT. So ADS-CFT predicts, by the way, maybe I mentioned this to Larry in particular, the fact that viscosity as a function of coupling constant in ADS-CFT goes to a constant at large coupling is property of large N approximation. If we relax large N approximation, we will have answers which will have electric and magnetic, which will have G and 1 over G, and there would be a minimum when G is 1 somewhere. Yes? You are nodding because you agree? Okay. Yeah, I'm surprised. Okay. So in some sense, in principle, if there would be a strongly coupled but not large N approximation, there would be a minimum and also electric and magnetic dominance region even without confinement. And when electric and magnetic are equal, which means both G's are 1, that where presumably the best liquid will be in ADS2. Okay, so we have a lot of applications in equilibrium. We know in great detail, yes? I forgot to tell you, for example, that this Larry hologram of conical flow is not hydro, it's exact solution. You can go inside the solution to arbitrary small scale, microscopic scale, smaller than hydro normally tolerate, and you still have a solution. So you can, it is in equilibrium, but it's also in some sense not in equilibrium. It is in equilibrium, but you can study any scale. You can study very large momenta and look inside. It's not derived from collective theory, from effective theory. It's derived from exact theory.
What's the shortest distance scale on which that collective theory gives you a good description?
And in principle, so because n goes to infinity and the density of medium is proportional to n squared, so in this setting, the medium is infinitely dense. So you can go to any scale, and you still have medium. You still don't resolve your atoms. And so any scale. Yes. So yeah, I'm saying your solution is good at any scale, which is by itself remarkable. But we don't understand many things there, of course, etc. Now about this non-equilibrium. So my summary once again, why should we study it in this ADS setting? Because I think you can think of classical objects in the bulk and then by correspondence get interesting quantum formulas. So, for example, you have hologram of a classical string which behaves like a piece of rope, and the thermal properties on the other side have Bose distribution and know about H bar, yes, which is very nice. And then there is this dissipative bottom, which you substitute the inside of the black hole by membrane on the boundary, which already has dissipative phenomena. And this dissipative phenomena is not phenomenological Navier-Stokes with some viscosity, because it follows from Einstein equation plus boundary condition directly. So you get, that's why the viscosity and resistivity and all other quantities are just 4 pi or something like this. They're derivable.
That's true. You didn't emphasize that the fact that you took a large N limit.
Yeah, but really in gravity, even if I forget this and I say I study any black hole in classical gravity, so it has this membrane, and membrane is already dissipative, and it has completely universal properties, yes? And these properties are derivable from first principle and relatively simply, yes? Mm-hmm. We will be discussing how to derive viscosity in terms of diagrams, normal medium. It is very complicated business. And here you get it very quickly. And then there's a lot of work, of course, which we didn't share, but they get a lot of insights and solve some specific examples of this, for example, objects falling into black holes. So after this classical thing is solved, all what remains to be done is to do holograms back to horizon, which is a standard linear approximation Einstein that we already learned to do. So that at the end could be possible to do. Okay, so that's all.
Another question. How does this correspondence connect with experiments? Can you do really comparison with the specific observables and test whether this is a good correspondence?
Well, Larry will, in the discussion in a couple of days, will tell you. So there are these formulas. There are formulas, okay, for diffusion constant, Dirac, etc., which are derived from this business, right? And also, the simplest formula, by the way, is entropy. And just to give you an example, so entropy is like Stefan Boltzmann, which is zero coupling, times the famous temperature to the fourth, a number of degrees of freedom, number of colors squared, times the famous free quarter. So this free quarter, different from one, is a difference of entropy of this medium between zero coupling and infinite coupling. It's only changed by a quarter. Yes? You say, wow, how can it be that the total, we don't even know what are degrees of freedom in strongly coupled system, yet its entropy is about the same as we have another system like that, which is a universal strongly coupled atoms trapped at low temperature. And they also have, for example, cold Fermi gas. So in this case, total energy is equal to energy of ideal Fermi gas times a number. And this number in the infinite coupling limit is about a half. Infinite centering length, yes, which is, in that sense, infinite coupling, let me say, yes. Well, if scattering length, a small scattering length, you think of perturbative amplitude. That's as close to coupling.
In that case, that's supposed to be Einstein compensating,
right?
Right. Cold-Fermi.
Well, cold Fermi system, etc. So it shows that the energy, yeah. So I want to emphasize, just answering your question, I want to emphasize this thing, that in global observables like total energy, entropy, blah, 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 we have some constant, and these constants are three quarter, one half, nothing special. In transport properties, we have, in some sense, infinite difference, that the Dirac coefficient has square root of lambda, and square root of lambda go to infinity, you get ridiculously small zero distance on which the jet loses all its energy, right? You say, how can it be? So, and we see that this hydrodynamical explosion, jet quenching, and this free phenomena which I mentioned, all works, yes? This is absolutely remarkable.
See, it works if you compare with daytime.
Yes, yes. I didn't show you comparison except for this piece from Ramashke. About elliptic flow, but there are many, many plots about overall hydro, which described the data bang on, and that was actually prediction, etc. But and there is this jet quenching calculations. So what is very important is this: nobody believed it will work. If you take any normal substance and take so hydrodynamic have name from water, right? So you take water, take 1,000 molecules of water and try to see flow. Forget it. It will not work, yes? The viscosity is way too large, yes? A system of 1,000 molecules will not show any hydrodynamics. And this system does. We found it with gold-gold central collisions. Then we go to peripheral, and then we go to lighter nuclei, etc. It turns out that a system of 100 particles is already hydrodynamical, and the transition is pretty rapid. So it's very amazing that this thing works. Yes? The fact that inside this fireball you can see a conical, Mach-conic flow, if you go inside this hydro solution, you actually find that solution is very inhomogeneous. It has a short layer of moving thing close to the cone, and all the rest is standing. So if Paul Ramashka on next conference will put Navier-Stokes with the conical flow, you will discover, presumably, that you need even smaller eta in order to reproduce data, because otherwise it will be killed. Let's see.
When you say that it's inhomogeneous, it's not the observable, which you do.
But you still observe that there is a flow, and the flow goes in that direction, in the Mach direction. So if this whole thing would be eaten by viscosity, you will not see a thing. Yes? You will see just everything co-moving. And
but you have the freedom of adjusting initial conditions.
No, no.
Of course you have.
No, no. For jets, absolutely no freedom. You have one high energy particle going from medium, yes? And you see correlation. The correlation goes at angle 60 degrees. That is just speed of sound in the medium, okay? Very difficult to move this thing.
It's experimental. I don't think this is a subtle issue.
Subtle issue, okay.
What is the D?
But nothing goes forward. If you would think about Boltzmann type of thing, that you have particle flies, and it collides with other particles. The first thing you would say, oh, there are binary collisions, right? Binary collisions means you have a maximum distribution which correspond to center of mass, angle of center of mass rest frame. That you have jet colliding with another particle. Suppose it's isotropic. Then you calculate back to this frame. You have a maximum corresponding to square root of s, right? That angle is nowhere close to 60 degrees. It's forward. Yes? Where is it? So particle is not colliding with two particles. Yes, we clearly see it's a collective phenomenon. Yes? In order to get this large angle, to say it differently is that we see that where the energy goes. All the energy goes there, at nearly 90 degrees. Where the longitudinal momentum goes? It disappears, right? All these particles, it was a jet, it has energy and momentum, right? Energy we recover, but it goes nearly 90 degrees. So where is the momentum? Yes? It goes to the whole fireball as a whole, yes? And we kind of, it goes to so small momentum that we cannot detect it, yes? Any simple picture where a particle collides with particle or with two particles, etc., would never produce it.
If you have a stochasticity and the jet gets relatively earlier deflected, and then it will not go to 180, but to some...
Yeah, but you have then stochastic thing will spread. So you can easily, yes. You can easily do that instead of expecting sharp jet, you will get wider jet. But it's not wider jet. But it's a peak at some other angle. Yes, this is a very different story.
Case by case basis, you don't observe an average.
Yeah, that's a question, of course. Of so this is two particle correlation. Then they did three particle correlations. It would be nice, at least, to see the whole geometry in terms of cone, which is not yet completely there, but there are signs of that. Okay.
Some of these issues we will touch on tomorrow, subsequent talks.
This diffusion constant, is a diffusion constant for what?
That was, the measured one is actually for charm quark. Yes, for charm quark specifically, and it would be, well, for the diffusion you need, like you explained students in physics 101, that you put little drop of ink and then follow what happens and what size it has, right? So you need something which is different from your medium. So in that sense, charm is nice. And diffusion of something out of which medium is made is hard to measure. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.